When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Apologies for the ads. As an independent one-woman show, ads help me recover some of my costs. If you want to skip the ads, sign up to the exclusive feed. All episodes are free from ads and there's full-length bonus episodes as well. The link is in the show notes. You can also make a one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/amillionOTW. And on with the show, as they say. This is A Million Other Choices, and I am your host, Kim. Today is technically supposed to be my April installment of Intimate Partner Homicides in Canada in the year 2018, but today's a little bit different. I am still exploring gender-based violence in 2018, but today's story is actually the very opposite of Intimate Partner Homicide, but deals with incels, which is a subject that I'm very much interested in. And since April is my birthday month, I guess I can talk about whatever I want to. And this is a story that if you are Canadian, you're probably at the very least aware of it. But if you're American, you've probably not heard of it. You have your own incels to deal with down south, as does pretty much every country now, from Iceland all the way to Australia. And if you aren't familiar with the term incel, it's involuntarily celibate, but we're going to get to that part. This is the 2018 Toronto van attacks. But the first thing I want to do before I even get to the story and the background is to go through each of the 11 victims. There were 10 deaths that day, but since 2018, an 11th person has died of their injuries. 9 women and 2 men. This was very much an attack on women, simply for being women. And unfortunately, incels do tend to take out men as well. It's part of the whole sort of ideology, which we are going to get into. In no particular order. Now, most of this background information comes from Liam Casey at the CBC, who interviewed the victims' families and friends. I was absolutely shaken by these people's stories. Their lives were all so full of courage and challenges that they had or were trying to overcome. It's just such a sad story and so sad that they were taken away from us. We have Betty Forsyth, 94. She was born in East Sussex in the UK back in 1923. She survived the Great Depression and World War II in Britain, which was remarkable in of itself. However, her father went missing in action in 1928, vanishing at sea while in the British Army. She came to Canada in 1968 with her 9 poodles. It doesn't say if she was married or not, but she did enjoy her trips to the casino and watching Coronation Street. She just sounds like a spry old girl for her age. Geraldine Brady, known as Jerry, she was 83. She was also quite the go-getter. She had grown up in Toronto and lived with her husband, of whom she was married for 60 years. On the day she was killed, she took out $200 from the Bank of Nova Scotia to put in her daughter and 2 grandchildren's birthday cards that she had ready to give to them. They all had birthdays around the same time. Then she bought some diapers for her great-grandson and was heading to her car at the time to pop over to the Bank of Montreal to pay some bills. She was expected home by 2 for her afternoon nap. Jerry had lived a rather hard life, but remained very positive. She had gotten cancer in her jaw and still bore the scars from that. Doctors had taken bits of bone from her legs to reconstruct her bottom jaw. Jerry's own mother had been beaten and raped in 1994 at the age of 83. That case has never been solved, and she wore the albatross of grief for the next 20 years over that. Junhun Kim was only 22. She had come over from Korea to study in Canada at the Seneca College. Her classmates called her June and remember her as happy and always smiling. I'm always so impressed by anyone that up and leaves their home country and comes to Canada. It just shows such bravery, especially when English is a second language for you. You are definitely my hero if you've ever done that. Not just Canada, but anywhere in the world that is new for you. Renuka Amarasinghe, 45, she was originally from Sri Lanka and had come to Canada with her husband in 2010, but it had been an arranged marriage and he was a complete asshat, so she found a female police officer, Constable Laura Middleton, to help her and her unborn child. She was 5 months pregnant at that time. She went on to get a divorce and graduate university in 2015 and was raising her 9-year-old son on her own like a complete badass. Andrea Braden was 33. She was a recent divorcee and thinking about dipping her feet in the dating pool again. She was known by friends as someone that was very generous and loved to plan parties, and she would bring things like flowers and balloons to houses to make things extra festive. She and her dog Jimmy were planning on going to New York in May of 2018 with a girlfriend. She one day wanted to have a baby and find love again. Munir Najjar, 85, he was one of the two men killed in the attacks. He had been born in Jordan. He studied in Baghdad and then moved to the U.S., but was living back in Jordan in 2018 with his wife of 53 years, Lillian. The couple was extremely happily married. He loved to take care of her by fixing things around the house for her. Together, they played cards and cooked together as a couple. They had come to Toronto to visit their adult children for a couple of months. His children describe him as a man with an inner child and that he saw beauty in everything around him and he appreciated all the little things that most people take for granted. Anne-Marie D'Amico, 30, she was a furiously funny woman who could impromptu write new song lyrics to lighten up a mood, like when she sung Lady in Bed to the tune of Lady in Red when her mum was bedridden after a fall on some ice. She was as much a studious young woman as she was funny, earning 97.5% on her final exam for the data analytics course she had just completed. She was also an adrenaline junkie, enjoyed skydiving and zip lines. She would try just about anything. She had a black belt in taekwondo, a softball player, and she was also a pool hustler, for fun, of course. She also once participated in Cooper's Hills cheese rolling contest in England. She just sounds like somebody that I would want to have on speed dial when I need some cheering up. Dorothy Sewell, 80, another spry old girl. She was working on her bucket list with her sister Joan. They had walked the outer rim of the CN Tower, but they weren't able to finish their other items. Dorothy was a huge sports fan, and her sister would watch just about any game that one of their Toronto teams was playing while on the phone with each other, yipping, cheering over the phone lines as if they were sitting in the stands together. Sohee Chung, again, only 22. Sohee was mum to fur baby Coco and had studied at the University of Toronto. She was working her way through school working at Holt Renfrew. Her best friend and roommate said of her, being in an industry full of jealous and fake people, Sohee stood out like a bright shining light, always kind, gentle, and warming anyone with her genuine smile. She was a smart, ambitious, and respectful girl with a bright future ahead of her. And one of her co-workers started something that she called the Sohee Effect, which is a way of getting people to help her character traits of being more loving and less critical of each other to live on. Chul-Min Kang, 45, known as Eddie, he was married to So-Min Kim. Not a lot is known about Chul, who is the second of the two men that was killed, but he was originally from Korea and worked as a chef at the Copacabana Brazilian Steakhouse. He had a passion for cooking, and So-Min is completely lost without her husband by her side since his death. And lastly, Amarish Tesfamarian, 65. She was an elementary school teacher originally from Ethiopia, and when the war broke out back home, she fled to Canada, trying to settle in Montreal, but she wasn't able to find meaningful work there. So she moved to Toronto and at the age of 43 decided to go back to school to become a nurse. She was working in a long-term care home which suited her compassionate and very helpful nature. The attack had left her paralyzed from the neck down and using a ventilator to breathe, but she never once complained. She was determined to make it home out of the hospital one day, but she died of her injuries in October of 2021. It's just so many lives destroyed for really no good reason. So buckle up, this is really a brutally sad one. Okay, so next I'm going to tell you what happened on April 23rd, 2018, and then we'll get into this asshat and his malfunction and a bit more about incels in general. At 1:24 p.m. on April 23rd, 2018, a white Chevy Express van rented from Ryder and had Ryder decals on it was driving south on Yonge Street, which is the main artery through Toronto's downtown core. He passed Hendon Avenue, and when he got to Finch Avenue, he blew through the red light, suddenly gunning it, and got on the west sidewalk of Yonge Street at very high speed. At 1:25, he hit his first victim, who I believe might have been Dorothy. It was either Dorothy, Betty, or Jerry. 911 was called by a number of people. The van, still at a high speed, just kept going. And when he got on Tolman Street, just past Finch, the sidewalk narrows there, so he got back onto the road, but by hitting like post boxes and trees and other parked cars, and then back onto the sidewalk on Park Home Avenue and reached the Mel Lastman Square, which is a downtown mall or like a civic plaza with a covered sidewalk against the buildings. And then there's like a line of pillars before the actual sidewalk. He continued on there on the actual sidewalk, hitting pedestrians as he went, still at a very high rate of speed. But fortunately, the majority of the people walking along there were under that covered walkway. And the interesting thing is that he doesn't appear to be swerving to hit people, nor does he make any maneuvers to avoid anyone. He's just driving in a straight line. He then blows another intersection and turns right onto, I believe it's called Elmhurst Avenue. Constable Ken Lamb was on patrol that day and caught up with the speeding van as he turned left onto Beecroft Road, heading towards Shepherd Avenue West, and then turned his lights on. The driver stopped suddenly on Hollitz Avenue. Ken immediately pulled his gun out, ordering him out of the van. The driver got out of the driver's seat and pulled a dark object at him, which I don't believe was a gun, but something that the driver hoped that Ken would think was a gun. And Ken repeatedly ordered him to get onto the ground, and instead the driver kept putting whatever this object was behind his back and then quickly drawing it in like a firing position to goad the officer into shooting him. But Ken just kept his real gun pointed at him. And finally, the driver started advancing towards Ken, still pointing this object directly at Ken. And Ken must have been able to tell that it wasn't a gun or not a real gun, because although he walks backwards from the driver as he advances on him, he puts his gun back in his holster and then trades it for a nightstick. At which point the driver realized Ken wasn't going to back down or shoot him, and he dropped whatever it was, then put his hands up and was taken down. There is footage of all of this available online if you're interested. Not the mowing down of people, not those parts, those have been redacted, but the rate of speed that he was driving at and how that arrest went down. From start to finish, the attack was started at 1:24. His arrest was at 1:32 p.m. He was identified as 25-year-old Alec Minasian.
Refresh your home today at Menards with window images, blinds, and shades. We have everything you need for updating your window treatments. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Save big on window treatments at Menards. Plus, get them cut to width in-store for free. Visit Menards.com and view our entire selection of window treatments today. Plus, the weekly flyer and other great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
9 people died at the scenes. At 8:15, the Toronto Police Service announced that a 10th person had died, and then in October 2021, we lost the 11th victim, Amarish Tesmafarian. Detective Rob Thomas interviewed Alex to get the what the fuck out of him, and I'll play you some of that to get you a sense of his demeanor and whatnot, but at first let me give you kind of the goods on this idiot and his idiocy. Alex had no prior criminal record. His dad, Vahee, was Armenian, and his mom, Sana, was Iranian. Both worked in IT. Alex was a student at Seneca College taking software development and described by his classmates as not overly social and harmless. He is apparently on the autism spectrum with Asperger's, which he tries to claim later as a defense, but just wound up making a lot of people in the autism community even more upset with him. He had enrolled in the Canadian Armed Forces in 2017, but had been discharged after only 16 days of recruit training because he wasn't adapting to military life too well, but not by means of being volatile or anything, he just wasn't socially adjusting. And in college, he made Facebook posts that he identified as an incel, writing, "The incel rebellion has already begun. We will overthrow all the Chads and Stacys. All hail the supreme gentleman, Elliot Rodger." Elliot Rodger, of course, was the master or supreme asshat of the incel movement, who in 2014 stabbed three men to death in his apartment, one by one on their arrival. About 3 hours later, he drove to a sorority house, and after not being able to get inside, he shot three women outside, two of whom died. And then he next drove to a nearby deli, shot a male student inside to death. He then began to drive through Isla Vista, shooting and wounding several pedestrians from his car and striking several others with his car. He exchanged gunfire with the police twice, and he was injured in the hip. And after his car crashed into a parked vehicle, he was found dead inside with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Just before going to the sorority house, he had uploaded a video on YouTube called Elliot Rodger's Retribution, which is basically just his delusional manifesto about wanting to punish women for rejecting him and his jealousy over attractive men. In the end, he killed 6 people and injured 14 others before taking himself out. And for those of you not familiar with incels and all of this nonsense, I'm going to give you a quick rundown. When you're an incel, you're a celibate, basically because no girls, or at least ones that are deemed universally sexually attractive, will have you. And you blame women for that. Incels like to troll on online forums and are almost always men. Elliot Rodger is like their god or something, at least the subculture's founding father. The subculture is often characterized by a deep resentment, hatred, hostility, sexual objectification, misogyny, misanthropy, self-pity and self-loathing, racism, a sense of entitlement to sex, blaming of women and the sexually successful for their situation, which is often seen as predetermined due to biological determinism, evolutionary genetics, or basically like a rigged system. There's a sense of futility and nihilism. They subscribe to rape culture and the endorsement of sexual and non-sexual violence against women and sexually active people. Over time, this subculture has become associated with extremism and terrorism. And the whole term incel was actually rather innocent. It was started by a woman named Alana here in Canada in 1997. She had started an online group to discuss her loneliness and confusion over her sexual orientation. She grew up, became more comfortable with her sexuality, and stopped participating in the site in the year 2000. And in 2014, when she learned of Elliot Rodger's actions, said, "Like a scientist who invented something that ended up being a weapon of war, I can't uninvent this word, nor restrict it to the nicer people who really need it." And slowly over time, as white people like to do, it was taken over by more extremist thinking men and began to become very misogynistic and pro-rape, for lack of a better word. And many of these communities see violence as a solution to their perceived societal oppression. Anyways, I could do an entire series on incels. If you are interested in that, maybe let me know, and maybe next season I'll take it on as a project. But back to the story of the day, Alex was charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder and 13 counts of attempted murder. That was later up to 16 counts of attempted murder, and his trial was started on November 10th, 2020 by Zoom because it was COVID. He pled not criminally responsible because his defense claimed that his autistic thinking made him do it. He was not successful in that and was found guilty on all counts, but his sentencing was delayed until June 13th of 2022 because everyone was waiting on this decision of the Alexandre Bissonnette appeal and how stacked parole and eligibility periods were unconstitutional, which, do not get me started on. And anyways, it was, according to the Supreme Court of Canada, from a bunch of judges who obviously have never lost a loved one to homicide, So he is eligible for parole in 2043. He'll be 50. He appealed for a new trial that the judge had made unreasonable findings. He filed the appeal in July of 2022, but I have not heard anything about it yet, so I guess it hasn't happened. So I will update you if I hear anything on that. Now, I have left Alex, speaking and telling his side of the story until the end, because if you don't give a rat's banana about what he has to say, you can just stop listening now. I'll have a new case for you next week. Thank you so much for listening. And if you do want to hear what he has to say for himself, I will let him play us out.
Alex?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. You drink water?
Sure.
Thanks so much. How are you feeling?
I'm good.
You're feeling okay? My name's Rob Thomas.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, how are you? You doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably had better days than this, I guess, eh?
Yeah. Well, I am a little shaken, to be honest.
A little shaken?
It's not, like, it's not my usual day, obviously.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. Yeah. Alec. Mind if I call you Alec?
Yeah, sure.
What do your friends normally call you?
Alec.
Yeah. Alec, my name's Rob Thomas. I want you to call me Rob from here on in, okay?
Okay.
Is that okay?
Oh.
Okay. Alec, I want you to understand something. I'm a senior detective with the Toronto Police. Do you understand what that means?
Yes.
You know I'm a police officer?
Yes.
Okay. I don't wear a uniform. I wear a suit and tie because of the type of work that I do. But although I'm in a suit and tie, I'm an actual police officer, okay? And I'm one of the senior investigators on this case, okay? I got called in for this specific case because of what's happened and the involvement and everything else that's been going on, okay? Before we get started, I want you to know that we're being videotaped and audio taped,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes, everything I see and do is being captured.
Exactly, yeah, on audio and video, okay? Now, here's what I want to do, Alec. I want to talk to you, okay? We're going to spend a good deal of time together, okay?
Uh-huh.
It's important that I talk to you, all right? I've done a little bit of reading, and I know a little bit about involuntary
celibacy.
Celibacy, right. So being celibate, involuntarily,
yes.
Celibate. What does that mean?
That means celibacy means someone who never has a sexual intercourse.
Right.
Involuntary celibacy means this wasn't your choice.
You essentially
Have been thrown into true forced loneliness and you're unable to lose your virginity.
Right.
This is especially painful for young males.
Right. That makes sense. When did you first, you mentioned this and I forgot. When did you first go on the 4chan?
2014.
And specifically when, in 2014?
May 23, 2014.
How were you able to remember that?
Because I remember that was a very significant day.
Okay. What was that?
That was when Elliot Rodger decided to essentially commit an uprising, a beta uprising, if you will,
right,
against the Chads and the Stacys. It was a beta uprising.
A beta uprising? Okay.
Although he didn't call it a beta uprising at the time. Someone else who was inspired by him, by the name of Chris Harper, called it a beta uprising sometime in, actually, I believe it was October 1, 2015.
It was Elliot Rodger who was the father of
basically
this.
The founding forefather
of the
entire movement.
Right. So explain to me this movement. What's this movement about?
It's basically a movement of angry incels such as myself who are unable to get laid. Therefore, we want to overthrow the Chads, mm-hmm. which would force the Stacys to be forced to reproduce with the incels.
Right. Okay. When you say incels,
involuntary celibate.
Celibate. So that's just a short form for fellas who
can't get laid,
can't have sex. Right. Okay. And what happened in the Elliot Rodgers uprising? What did he do?
I know he used a gun as well as a vehicle to convert the life status of certain individuals to a death status.
Right.
Only to carry the message that incels can't be oppressed.
And then what about Chris Harper Mercer? What did he do?
He used a gun for all of his murders.
And were these fellas active on 4chan?
Yes.
They were. Have you ever communicated with these fellas?
I actually have, as a matter of fact.
Who did you communicate with?
Both of them, actually.
Really?
We discussed our frustrations at society and being unable to get laid. And we were plotting a certain timed strikes mm-hmm. on society in order to confuse and shake the foundations, just to put all the normies in a state of panic.
Okay. And who would be a normie?
Normie means normal people. That would be anyone who is considered to be normal by the unfair standards of society.
But not the Chads or Stacys.
Chads and Stacys are actually above normies, or at least they think they're above normies.
Of course, yeah. Okay, all right. So is it fair to say you've got Chads and Stacys up here, normies down here, and then you've got celebs who believe that they are being
Incels
who believe they're being suppressed or repressed,
yes.
and so as a result, even the playing field.
Yes.
They convert the Stacys and Chads from living to dead, and to
so
make
so that we come out on top.
Yeah, more than so. The targets? Who are the targets for this uprising be?
All of the alpha males.
All the alpha males. So the Chads.
Yes.
So those are the people that you want to kill.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And who else?
Any of the Stacys who do not wish to give their love and affection to the incels.
So they're a target as well.
Yes.
To be killed.
Yes.
Okay. And what about the normies? Normies.
Yes, we don't necessarily wish to kill the normies, but we do wish to subjugate them in order to make them understand that that our type is the more superior one.
Right, right. So when you say subjugate, what do you mean by that?
Meaning either imprison them or put them in a lower position in society.
Okay.
So that they acknowledge the incels or the Pepe the Frog types as the more superior ones.
You're saying things that I'm not familiar with.
Sorry.
What's a Pepe the Frog?
He's a mascot on 4chan.
He's a mascot?
Yes.
Oh, mascot on 4chan.
Yes. I was using a metaphor.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, so he's actually worshipped quite frequently.
Oh, okay, okay. All right. So going back to the conversation with Chris and Elliot, who did you have conversation with first? Let me ask you that.
Elliot.
So how did you learn of Elliot?
Because we private messaged each other on Reddit.
Yep.
After I saw one of his posts,
mm-hmm.
and we just talked about each other and got to know each other, and we found each other very interesting. We both had the same frustrations at society,
right.
Despite being separated by distance so far apart.
Right, right, right. Did you ever visit him?
No, but I wish I could have.
Yeah. Did he ever come and visit you?
No, but I wish he did.
Yeah, yeah. When specifically did you first have contact with Elliot?
January of 2014.
And when did you stop having communication with him?
As soon as he was deceased.
Okay. So his act, I know, took place in 2014, but I wasn't aware of the exact day. What day was it?
May 23, 2014.
May 23rd. Yeah, you said that. So when did you last speak to him? May 20th. And so what did he tell you?
He told me that he has to go. He is on a very important mission, mm-hmm. and he might not make it back alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what did you say to him?
I kind of had an idea in my head of what he was planning, but I didn't want to think it was true at the time. So I replied and said, I wish you good luck with that.
Right on. Okay. Okay, and when did you learn that what he had done?
I saw it on the news later that night.
Later on the 23rd?
Yes.
Okay, and what did you think?
I thought that I came to the understanding that this is the mission that he had to carry out.
Okay, all right. And anything else?
I felt kind of proud of him for his acts of bravery.
Okay, all right. And what about how you started to change your thinking? Was any of that going on?
I was starting to feel radicalized at that time.
You were? Okay. And when you say radicalized, what do you mean by that?
Meaning I felt it was time to take action and not just sit on the sidelines and just fester in my own sadness.
Right on. Okay. All right. So what takes place next as part of this growing radicalization?
To be honest, the planning didn't occur until about a month ago. Most of it was actually just thinking.
Okay.
And daydreaming.
Okay. All right. So the thinking and daydreaming, when did that start?
That started about a month after the rebellion in May of 2014.
Okay, so...
So in June, I started thinking about this stuff.
And then that continued right up till about a month ago?
Yes, which is when I booked the van with the rider in order to use as a tool for rebellion.
Okay, all right. So take me through that process. What was going through your mind, and how was, you know, what were you thinking when you were doing all of this? What was going on?
I was thinking that it was a time that I stood up to the Chads and Stacys.
Okay. And then, so what happened? So this, tell me what takes place.
So I booked the van.
Yeah.
And then I just simply wait until today.
Yeah.
And then I go rent the van, and then I drive it, take it downtown to Toronto.
Okay.
And I just start using it as a weapon.
Okay. All right. And so when you say that, what do you mean by that?
Meaning the vehicle collided with several pedestrians, some of who are no longer alive as a result.
Right. Right. Okay. 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 And so that's a lot of information. Take me back to a month ago. You said this is when this whole planning started?
Yes.
Okay. So about a month ago, where were you at that point?
I was at Seneca College, and I decided to phone Ryder and book either a truck or a van with them. And they had a 10-foot van available, mm-hmm. So I figured that this is perfect. Mm-hmm. I can not, it's big enough to have an effect, but not too big that I can't maneuver with it. So van was the perfect medium size to use as my weapon.
Okay, so when do you leave Ryder?
I wasn't looking at the time when I left, but I know I received the van before 1 p.m., although it was, the booking was actually scheduled for 1.
Okay, all right. And how long does it take you to get from Ryder to Yonge Street?
To the beginning of Yonge?
The beginning of the attack.
Oh, to the near Yonge and Finch.
Yeah.
I would estimate about 20 to 30 minutes.
20 to 30 minutes. Now, what are you thinking while you're in the van?
I'm thinking that this is it. This is the day of retribution.
Okay. And anything else in your mind?
Just that. That's the only thing that's in my mind. It's just burning in my mind.
Burning in your mind.
Yeah.
Okay. And so let me ask you this, because this is really interesting. Why do you choose Yonge and Finch?
I didn't choose Yonge and Finch in particular. I was driving down Yonge because I knew it would be a busy area. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as I saw there were pedestrians, mm-hmm. I just decided to go for it.
Okay. And so where specifically were you in terms of your specific location? Where were you when you just decided to go for it?
I was at some traffic lights.
Okay, where?
Actually, I don't remember. The only reason, in fact, if I hadn't, I remember some other, I had heard some other officer Earth mentioned Young and Finch before. That's the only reason I really remember it. Okay. But otherwise, I actually wouldn't have remembered Young and Finch. I just knew that I started seeing a lot of people walking.
Okay. Am I correct when I say that you knew at least you were on Young Street?
Yes.
And you knew that you were...
Because I specifically chose it beforehand. Because I even looked for that ramp from Highway 7 to Young.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, nevertheless, you're at a stoplight, you said?
Yes.
Are you faced with a red light? You're stopped?
Yes, but as soon as it turned green, I started going.
Okay, and just walk me through this, okay, step by step. So it turns green, and what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that this is it. I see all these people. It's time to go for it.
Time to go for it. And what do you do?
I floor the pedal,
yeah.
I speed the van towards them, and I allow the van to collide with them.
Okay. And then what happens?
Some people get knocked out of the way, some people roll over the top of the van.
Okay. And then what happens?
I continue doing that until... In fact, to be honest, the only reason I stopped my attack was because someone's drink got splashed on my windshield, and I was worried that I would crash the van anyway, so I decided, okay, now I wanted to do more, but I've kind of been foiled by a lack of visibility. So then that's when I turned right, and I saw the cops approaching, so I decided to pull over and get out of my van.
Okay. How long do you travel from the moment that you decide this is it, the light turns green, and you mount the sidewalk, is that right?
Yes.
To the time that you stop, how long in terms of distance would that have been?
About two or three traffic lights.
Two or three traffic lights. Okay. So you turn right at what street?
I don't remember which street. I wasn't paying attention.
Why do you turn right?
Because there wasn't any convenient place to stop at Young, and like I said, that there was a lack of visibility on my windshield. I could hear the cops coming anyway, so when I turned right, there was a convenient place to pull over on the sidewalk.
Okay. Okay, and so you physically stop your vehicle.
Yes.
You physically stop. So you end the assault.
Yes.
Okay. And you end it because you can't see.
Yes.
And you knew the cops were coming.
Yes.
Okay. And so then what happens at that point?
I see a patrol car pull over, and I hear the cops screaming at me to get out. So I get out, and I point my wallet at the cop with the intent for it to be confused with the gun so that I could be fatally shot.
Okay. And was that something you were thinking about?
Yes.
What I'm saying
even beforehand, I premeditated as an attempted suicide by cop.
You wanted to be killed by the police.
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask why you decided to equip yourself with a wallet, not something else?
I was worried. I was thinking about purchasing a toy gun, right. But I was kind of paranoid that for whatever reason. The rental company would ask to see my pockets or any bag if I chose to bring that. So I decided to go as stealthy as possible so no one suspects anything.
Okay. All right. Nevertheless, you get out of the van, the officer correct me if I'm wrong, because I want to make sure I get this right. You get out of the van because the officer orders you out?
Yes.
Okay. And you want to die by suicide by police, so you point your wallet at him?
Yes.
Okay. And do you say anything to the officer?
I actually told him that I had a gun in my pocket, which was untrue.
Right.
Then I stuck my left hand in my pocket and attempted to do this just to provoke a reaction.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he didn't react,
right.
So then I ended up being ordered to the ground. So I knew at that point, he's not going to shoot me, so I've lost, so I had no choice but to just get on the ground.
I'm going to ask you this, because it's important. 10 people died here today. 15 people were seriously injured. I think it's important to ask how you feel about that.
I feel like I accomplished my mission.
You feel like you accomplished your mission?
Yes.
If the families of those people who were murdered and were injured were in this room right now, what would you say?
I honestly don't know what I would say.
Would you apologize?
I honestly don't know.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The world of 911 emergency dispatching is brutally diverse. One minute you can be talking with someone about parking violations.
What's the process we are to take to have people towed? Because it's actually delaying the mail.
And then all hell can break loose. Then the rest of the day is crazy. We could have murders.
Hill County 911, what's your emergency?
I just killed my children.
Home invasions.
He's in my house. I shot him.
You shot him?
He was coming up towards me and I shot him.
Natural disasters.
Tornado came through the gutters. I'm buried on the bombs to all my life.
Even bombings.
Okay, Drew, just have it closing.
My show, Music City 911, will put you in the dispatcher's chair. Put you ear to ear with the callers and responders. And keep you on edge from start to finish. I hope to both educate and entertain, as I'm a 911 dispatcher with over 20 years experience. And just like dispatching, every episode is different from the last. Music City 911. Real 911 calls. Real 911 dispatchers. Available to listen to on any podcast app.